a most powerful mudra, whose bottom colour was blue mixed with red, created many offspring exactly resembling him in features, strength, and furious nature. Text 16. Rudranam Rudra Shishranam Samantad Agrasatam Jagat Isham Yasankhya So Yutam Pajapatir Sankhita. The sons and grandsons generated by Rudra were unlimited in number, and when they assembled together they attempted to devour the entire universe. When Brahma, the father of the living entities, saw this, he became afraid of the situation. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The generations of Rudra, the incarnation of anger, was so dangerous to the maintenance of universal affairs that even Brahma, the father of living entities, became afraid of them. The so-called devotees or followers of Rudra are also a menace. They are sometimes dangerous even to Rudra himself. Descendants of Rudra sometimes make plans to kill Rudra by the grace of Rudra. That is the nature of his devotees. You going to follow the Lord Shiva in here? We'll tread carefully. Probably because we don't have a lot of followers of the Lord Shiva in our community. We have less people in the Bhagavatam class. But so here, Srila Prabhupada speaking in his purport very strongly, of course, just reiterating the mood of the Srimad Bhagavatam verses itself, describing that the so-called devotees, so-called meaning that they're not really devotees of demigods, are sort of more like doing business. They're generally people who worship the demigods, will go where their particular desires are fulfilled. They're really after their own remuneration, not necessarily that they're devoted to pleasing that particular demigod. Usually when they get the various benedictions, then their worship stops. But so they're so-called devotees or followers of Rudra, they're a menace and dangerous, dangerous even sometimes to Rudra himself, and that's the nature of his devotees. So there is a Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, in chapter 88, there's a long-standing debate between the followers of Lord Shiva and the followers of Lord Vishnu or Krishna Narayan as to who is the supreme. Srila Prabhupada mentions that, at various, actually from what I've heard, at various stages, sometimes these debates even end up in violent disputes. I believe people have even been killed. And the Prabhupada mentions that the followers of acharyas like Ramanujacharya, still, they will debate with the followers of Lord Shiva. He says generally the followers of Ramanujacharya, win that debate, and the various worshippers understand, yes, when we look at it properly, Lord Vishnu or Krishna or Narayan is supreme above Lord Shiva. But it's generally It's the very nature of this material world, that debate will just continue, because the followers of Lord Shiva are very stubborn in their understanding that actually Lord Shiva is the supreme. And you know, there is a mystery to this, that it is seen generally. This is one question that Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami. That Sukadeva Goswami, in previous chapters of the 10th canto, chapter 87, etc., described how, in answer to Parikshit Maharaj's question, what is the ultimate purpose of the Vedas? And the answer to that was that the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is bhakti yoga, to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, or his expansions as Narayana or Vishnu, not to worship various demigods, even up to Lord Brahma and Shiva. So, if that be so, if that is the supreme goal of the Vedas, one may question that why generally, more often, do we see that the followers of Lord Shiva do much better in this material world, apparently. They appear to be very opulent, protected, etc. Whereas the devotees of Lord Vishnu or Krishna appear to be somewhat poverty-stricken or apparently neglected. That adds to the just general perception that, why would you worship Lord Vishnu who just doesn't really seem to, or Krishna who doesn't quite seem to be able to look after his devotees as well as Lord Shiva does. And what makes that question even more interesting is that the followers of Vishnu or Krishna generally apparently not very well endowed materially, but Lord Vishnu is his eternal consort, is the goddess of fortune. He is the master of the goddess of fortune, in other words. Lord Krishna, Madhava, also the husband of the goddess of fortune. Wherever Lord Vishnu resides or Krishna resides is generally very opulent in all regards, even above all the demigods. Whereas Lord Shiva, his followers are quite opulent, and yet he lives in the snow. He doesn't build himself even a hut. He lives without any possessions of that. So, it's a paradoxical situation. So, this question was answered by Sukadeva Goswami. And he described that that same question was asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj after the Rajasuya Jagya. That question was asked by Yudhisthira to Krishna, who's Parikshit Maharaj's grandfather. And first of all, Krishna explained that when Krishna shows his special mercy to his devotees, he first of all tends to take away their opulence. And Prabhupada mentions that this is why sometimes people are a little fearful to worship Krishna, because they have seen that. But Krishna does that because, as he describes in the Bhagavad Gita, he is the actual father of all living entities. And when he takes away the material opulence of a devotee who's somewhat sincerely trying to advance in their spiritual life, but material attractions are somehow, because of the material opulence, the devotee is not fully taking shelter of Krishna, still taking shelter of the material opulence, not quite surrendering fully to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna takes away that material opulence to the point where even one's own friends and relatives will then desert that, you know, devotee who Krishna has shown that mercy. As Prabhupada says, then the devotee becomes doubly unhappy because they've lost all their wealth, and then as a result of that, all their relatives and friends have deserted them. Not that I ever had any opulence, but I know that when I became a devotee, I certainly lost all my friends, and I've never revived a relationship with any of them since. They've just all never wanted to have anything to do with me for that one factor. Even my very best friend, who I'd known, and we literally did things together. We hitchhiked all around Australia, which is very, very close. As soon as I become a devotee, he wouldn't even speak to me. Is it just for that? Chanakya Pandit says that friends and relatives flee from the devotees of the Lord, but those who stay with the devotee become glorious. And I have seen that actually, that of the few relatives that, you know, over the period of time have stuck with, you know, stayed with that relationship with me, they're the only relatives that have flourished amongst all my relatives. All others have come to complete woe. So, but, you know, that is a, it is a mercy of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that Krishna does that just like sometimes you see a parent will punish, you know, the son or the daughter. It's for their benefit. It appears to be something harsh. One time Srila Prabhupada was actually, when he was in India, he was walking with a friend and he saw the mother of a boy, and she was chastising him very severely. I think she was beating him, and sort of Prabhupada was surprised. You know, he asked his friend, who sort of knew the neighbourhood, you know, how is it she's treating her son in such a, you know, very harsh way? And his friend replied that her other son had an illness which was, you know, on the verge of being fatal, and the doctor had prescribed that he must fast practically from, you know, just there was a few little things that he could have, otherwise it would just kill him. But because he was hungry, he'd asked his brother, "You please bring me, you know, such and such." So his brother had brought him this food, you know, out of kindness, so-called kindness, but it almost killed his brother at that. So the mother was really angry. So she was, it appeared, you know, so she was actually protecting both of them. By that anger, she was actually protecting both her sons like that. And actually the relationship of Krishna is like that, whereas the relationship of the demigods can be sometimes like the brother who gave the food to the one that was hungry. That they give a benediction or some so-called compassion, but it's not even ultimately beneficial for the person, the so-called devotee of that demigod, and sometimes it's not even beneficial for the demigod themselves. So in the instance with the brother giving the food, it wasn't beneficial for his brother who was receiving the food, and it wasn't beneficial for himself either, because he would have almost killed his brother, which would have been a great loss like that, and he would have copped the beating as well. So that is Krishna's mercy. Srila Prabhupada also describes that therefore one should not see the material circumstances, either materially impoverished or sometimes even disease condition of a devotee in the same way as one sees that of the non-devotees, because it's not due to karma. It is actually the result of the direct reciprocation between Krishna. And Krishna explains in the preface, I think it is, to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains that from the very beginning, when a devotee surrenders, from the very beginning, that actually Krishna directly takes charge of those devotees. It's not due to karma. One should not see like that. And when a devotee performs all sorts of activities in this material world, it appears to be that they're performing some auspicious, some inauspicious activities, and they appear to be suffering the results of their activities. But actually, whatever activities a devotee performs, auspicious or inauspicious, apparently, are actually taking them out of the cycle of birth and death. Whereas situation of the non-devotees, whether they live in a materially well-off position or not, whether they're performing auspicious, pious activities or not, either way, it is just keeping them in the cycle of birth and death. So it is a completely different situation. So Krishna explained that, and there's in a moment I'm going to read a little bit of the story of Brikashura, who received a benediction from Lord Shiva, and that highlights the story, this purport. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions that even a devotee's opulence, because sometimes Krishna also gives his devotees quite significant opulence or wealth, and that is equally his mercy for the devotees, because generally when Krishna has tested a devotee and is sure that the devotee is securely surrendered to him, he is confident to award a devotee also opulence, because he knows that by giving that opulence to that devotee does not have to waste their time with trying to maintain themselves in the material world in a very difficult way. It means that they don't have to depend upon others or unnecessarily associate with others. So sometimes Krishna also awards a very easy and opulent life for a devotee, and that is also a sign of Krishna's mercy. particularly if they are, if it is seen that that opulence is being used, you know, in their to facilitate their surrender and the expansion of their devotional service and the quality of their devotional service and developing that eternal relationship with the Lord. So, either way. So here in this story, we're going to read a little bit about Bhikkhusura. Sukadeva Goswami has been explaining how the demigods sometimes are very quickly satisfied with a person's worship, and you know, that they will, they're also very quickly angered if their devotees misbehave. Krishna or Vishnu, Narayan, you know, their dealings with the devotees are more like parental relationship. So they don't give benedictions very easily unless they understand this is actually beneficial. This is ultimately and immediately beneficial. And nor do they punish devotees unnecessarily unless it's ultimately beneficial. You know, just like it's said that the spiritual master also will not strongly chastise a disciple unless they're very advanced. Because sometimes, even though one may need chastisement, if a disciple is strongly chastised or criticised for some of the faults which need to be removed, the disciple may just go away or, you know, lose faith in the spiritual master. So ultimately, even though the chastisement may be necessary, it's not given. So Krishna and his representative, like that, whereas the demigods are very quick to give a benediction or very quick to be angered, even though the ultimate benefit of the devotee or the demigod is not there. So, let's have a look, we'll read a little bit of the story. Once Lord Shiva, after giving a benediction to a demon named Bhikkhusura, the son of Sukunti, was himself trapped in a very dangerous position. Bhikkhusura was searching after a benediction and trying to decide which of the three presiding deities to worship in order to get it. So again, it shows how the so-called devotees, because whoever was going to give him that benediction, he would become a devotee of that particular demigod. In the meantime, he happened to meet the great sage Narada and consulted with him as to whom he should approach to achieve quick results from his austerity. He inquired Narada of the three deities, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. Who is most quickly satisfied? Narada could understand the plan of the demon and he advised him, you had better worship Lord Shiva, then you will quickly get the desired result. Lord Shiva is very quickly satisfied and very quickly dissatisfied also. So you try to satisfy Lord Shiva. Narada also cited instances where demons like Ravana and Banasura were enriched with great opulences simply by satisfying Lord Shiva with prayers. Because the great sage Narada was aware of the nature of the demon Bhikkhusura, he did not advise him to approach Vishnu or Lord Brahma. Persons such as Bhikkhusura, who are situated in the material mode of ignorance, cannot stick to the worship of Vishnu. After receiving instruction from Narada, the demon Bhikkhusura went to Kedarnath. The pilgrimage site of Kedarnath still exists near Kashmir. Kedarnath is the devotees of Lord Shiva. According to the Vedic principle, when something is offered to the deities to eat, it is offered in fire. Therefore, a fire sacrifice is necessary in all sorts of ceremonies. It is specifically stated in the Shastras that the gods are to be offered something to eat through the fire. The demon Prakrishu therefore went to Kedarnath and ignited sacrificial fire to please Lord Shiva. That's interesting, because the fire is a very purifying medium, so that which is offered becomes purified through the fire as it is offered to the particular deity. But also it gives the worshipper, the offerer, faith that the food is actually being eaten because they can see it being consumed. Srila Prabhupada mentions that the fire yajna is therefore somewhat beneficial for those who don't have faith in deity worship, because in deity worship, they put the plate of food on and then they bring the same plate off and people look at it and say, well, it hasn't been eaten. But for people who need to see that food being eaten, the fire is a good medium like that. So they say, oh yes, it's all gone, the flames like that. So it's helpful. It's helpful to them. It's a step on the way, actually, to having faith also in the Antamurti. So even for those who worship demigods, it is prescribed. After receiving instruction from Narada, the demon in Prakrishu went to Kedarnath. After igniting the fire in the name of Lord Shiva to please him, Prakrishu began to offer his own flesh by cutting from his body. Here is an instance of worship in a mode of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada says that, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the topmost yogi is to think always of Lord Krishna within the heart, and the topmost sacrifice is to perform the Sankirtan Yajna. Bhikkhusura is demonstrating the lowest forms of sacrifice. In the Bhagavad Gita, stated that the worshippers of the demigods have lost their intelligence, as revealed later in this chapter. Prakrishu wanted to satisfy Lord Shiva for a third-class materialistic objective, which was temporary and without real benefit. The assurers or persons within the mode of ignorance would accept such benedictions from the demigods. In complete contrast to this sacrifice in the mode of ignorance, the Archanavidhi process for worshipping Lord Vishnu or Krishna is very simple. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he accepts from his devotee even a little fruit, a flower or some water, which can be gathered by any person, rich or poor. Of course, those who are rich are not expected to offer only a little water, a little piece of fruit or a leaf to the Lord. A man should offer according to his position. But if the devotee happens to be a very poor man, the Lord will accept even the most meager offering. The worship of Lord Vishnu is Vishnu or Krishna is very simple, and it can be executed by anyone in this world. But worship in the mode of ignorance, as exhibited by Prakrishu, is not only very difficult and painful, but it is also a useless waste of time. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says that worshippers of demigods are bereft of intelligence. Their process is very difficult, and at the same time, the result obtained is flickering and temporary. Although Bhikkhusura continued his sacrifice for 6 days, he was unable to personally see Lord Shiva, which was his objective. He wanted to see him face to face and ask him for a benediction. Here is another contrast between demons and devotees. A devotee is confident that whatever he offers to the deity in full devotional service is accepted by the Lord. But a demon wants to see his worshipful deity face to face so that he can directly take the benediction. On the seventh day, the demon, Prakrishu, decided that he should cut off his head and offer it to satisfy Lord Shiva. Thus he took a bath in a nearby lake, and without drying his body and hair, he prepared to cut off his head. When the demon was thus preparing to cut off his head, Lord Shiva became very compassionate. This compassion is a symptom of the quality of goodness. So, this compassion is present in every living entity. The compassion of Lord Shiva was aroused not because the demon was offering his flesh in the sacrificial fire, but because it was about to commit suicide. This is natural compassion. Therefore, when Lord Shiva appeared from the fire and ejected the demon from suicide, it was not done as a very great favour to him. Lord Shiva's touch saved the demon from committing suicide. His bodily injuries immediately healed, and his body became as it was before. Then Lord Shiva told the demon, "My dear Brihadarashtra, you do not need to cut off your head. You may ask from me any benediction you like, and I shall fulfill your desire. I do not know why you wanted to cut off your head to satisfy me. I become satisfied even by an offering of a little water." And of course, generally the Shiva lingas are worshipped with just a little bit of Ganges water. When the demon was offered this facility by Lord Shiva, he asked for a fearful and abominable benediction. The demon is very sinful, and sinful persons do not know what sort of benediction should be asked from the deity. Therefore, he asked Lord Shiva to bless him with such power that as soon as he would touch anyone's head, he would immediately crack and the man would die. The demons are described in the Bhagavad Gita as duskritis or miscreants. Kriti means very meritorious, but when du is added, it means abominable. Instead of surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the duskritis worship different demigods to derive abominable material benefits. So then Srila Prabhupada goes into a discussion about the similarity between those demigod worshippers and the scientists who invent their various weapons of mass destruction rather than things for people's benefit. Lord Shiva could understand the motive of the demon, and he was very sorry that he had assured him whatever benediction he liked. He could not withdraw his promise, but he was very sorry in his heart and that he was to offer him a benediction so dangerous to human society. Devotees of the Personality of Godhead never ask any benediction from Lord Vishnu or Krishna, and even if they ask something from the Lord, it is not at all dangerous for human society. That is the difference between the demons and the devotees, or the worshippers of Lord Shiva and the worshippers of Lord Vishnu. There's a picture there of Brihadarashtra, the son of Sukuni, about to cut off his head, offer it into the fire, Lord Shiva looking on above. Okay. So, the demon, however, being very sinful, immediately decided that he would use the benediction to kill Lord Shiva and take away Gauri, Parvati, from his for his personal enjoyment. He immediately decided to place his hand on the head of Lord Shiva. Thus, Lord Shiva was put into an awkward position because he was endangered by his own benediction to a demon. This is an instance of a materialistic devotee misusing the power derived from the demigods. Very important instruction there. As Prabhupada always used to say, if you want to do good, you first have to know what good is. Generally, even sometimes with devotees or great rishis and sadhus, there's a natural tendency to be kind and good, but quite often, if that sense of doing good for others, if there's no understanding coming from Krishna through the Parampara of what good actually is, it can cause all sorts of troubles, even to the devotee. Without further deliberation, the demon Brihadarashtra approached Lord Shiva to place his hand over Lord Shiva's head. Lord Shiva was so afraid of him that his body trembled, and he fled from the land to the sky and from the sky to other planets until he reached the limits of the universe. Above the higher planetary systems, Lord Shiva fled from one place to another, but the demon Brihaspati continued to chase him. The predominating deities of other planets, such as Brahma, Indra, and Chandra, could not find any way to save Lord Shiva from the impending danger. Wherever Lord Shiva went, they remained silent. At last, Lord Shiva approached Lord Vishnu, who was situated within this universe on the planet known as Svetadvipa. Svetadvipa is the local Vaikuntha planet beyond the jurisdiction of the influence of the external energy. Lord Vishnu, in his all-pervasive feature, remains everywhere, but whenever he remains personally in wherever he remains personally is the Vaikuntha atmosphere. So of course this is, you know, here also pointing out some very significant differences between Shiva and Vishnu, that although Vishnu resides within this material universe, it is Svetadvipa which is actually has all the qualities of Vaikuntha, of the spiritual world. And as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that only Lord Vishnu, not Shiva, not Brahma, is described as being the ultimate witness. He is all-pervasive of everyone's activities and the ultimate sanctioner or advisor even for Brahma and Shiva, which is also borne out in this story here. So Srila Prabhupada brings it back to the our practical understanding. The residential quarters in a temple of Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, are in Vaikuntha. It doesn't matter where the temple is situated. The temple itself, wherever it may be, is Vaikuntha. Similarly, the Svetadvipa planet, although within the material jurisdiction, is Vaikuntha. So there is, again, a difference between going to a temple of Krishna, Vishnu, Narayan, which is considered to be Vaikuntha, as opposed to going to a temple of Shiva or Durga or other demigods, which is actually still considered within the material universe. So, you know, so many different points of comparison. So Lord Shiva finally enters Svetadvipa Vaikuntha. So this is interesting also, that although it's Vaikuntha, Lord Shiva entered there with a problem. So even though the temple is Vaikuntha, still sometimes the devotees may enter the temple with their problems. But, you know, if they take shelter of... because there is a conjunction, you know, between the material and spiritual world, you know, that is the difference. Although it's Svetadvipa, it is Svetadvipa in conjunction with the material atmosphere. And the temples are like that. They're Vaikuntha, but we're still in conjunction with the material world like that. So actually, even devotees, they can, you know, you can put one foot into the material part and you put one foot in the way, you know. But it's best to be completely in the Vaikuntha consciousness. It comes down to consciousness. Srila Prabhupada says, if you're Krishna conscious, I think it's in Vrindavan, he said, don't think this, you know, the temple in Melbourne, although it's in Melbourne, don't think you're in Melbourne, you're in Vrindavan. You know, if you're in Krishna consciousness, that's the difference. So, Lord Shiva finally enters Svetadvipa Vaikuntha. In Svetadvipa, there are great saintly persons who are completely free from the envious nature of the material world and who are beyond the jurisdiction of the four principles of material activity, namely religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Anyone who enters into the Vaikuntha planet never returns to this material world. Lord Narayan is celebrated as a lover of his devotees, and as soon as he understood that Lord Shiva was in great danger, he appeared as a brahmachari and personally approached Lord Shiva to receive him from a distant place. Brahmachari with a belt around his waist, a sacred thread, a deer skin, a brahmachari stick, and rudra beads. Rudra beads are different from tulasi beads. Rudra beads are used by the devotees of Lord Shiva. Dressed as a brahmachari, Lord Narayan stood before Lord Shiva. The shining effulgence emanating from his body attracted not only Lord Shiva, but also the demon Bhikkhusura. Lord Narayan offered his respects and obeisances under Bhikkhusura just to attract his sympathy and attention. Thus stopping the demon, the Lord addressed him as follows. My dear son of Sukundi, you appear very tired as if coming from a distant place. What is your purpose? What have you come? Why have you come so far? I see that you are fatigued, so I request you to take a little rest. You should not unnecessarily tire your body. Everyone greatly values his body, because only with the body can one fulfill all the desires of one's mind. We should not therefore unnecessarily give trouble to the body. The brahmachari addressed Bhikkhusura as the son of Sukundi, just to convince him that he was known to his father, Sukundi. Bhikkhusura then took the brahmachari to be someone known to his family, and therefore the brahmachari's sympathetic words appealed to him. Before the demon could argue that he had no time to take rest, the Lord informed him about the importance of the body, and the demon was convinced. Any man, especially a demon, takes his body to be very important. Thus Bhikkhusura became convinced about the importance of his body. Then, just to pacify the demon, the brahmachari told him, "My dear Lord, if you think that you can disclose the mission for which you have taken the trouble to come here, maybe I should be able to help you so that your purpose will be very easily served." Indirectly, the Lord informed him that because the Lord is the Supreme Brahman, he would certainly be able to adjust the awkward situation created by Lord Shiva. The demon was greatly pacified by the sweet words of Lord Narayan in the form of a brahmachari, and at last he disclosed all that had happened in regard to the benediction offered by Lord Shiva. The Lord replied to the demon as follows. "I myself cannot believe that Lord Shiva has in truth given you such a benediction. As far as I know, Lord Shiva is not in the same mental condition. When he had a quarrel with his father and Lord Daksha, he was cursed to become a Pisacha, a ghost. Thus he has become the leader of the ghosts and hobgoblins. Therefore, I cannot put any faith in his words. But if you still have faith in the words of Lord Shiva, my dear king of demons, then why don't you make an experiment by putting your hand on your own head? If the benediction proves false, then you can at once kill this liar, Lord Shiva, so that in the future he will not dare to give out false benedictions." In this way, by Lord Narayan's sweet words and by the expansion of his superior illusion, the demon became bewildered, and he actually forgot the power of Lord Shiva and his benediction. He was thus very easily persuaded to put his hand on his own head. As soon as the demon did that, his head cracked as if struck by a thunderbolt, and he immediately died. The demigods from heaven showered flowers on Lord Narayan, praising him with shouts of all glories and all thanksgiving. And they offered their obeisances to the Lord. On the death of Bhikkhusura, all the denizens in the higher planetary systems, namely the demigods, the Pitris, the Gandharvas, and the inhabitants of Janaloka, showered flowers on the personality of Godhead. Thus Lord Vishnu, in the form of a brahmachari, released Lord Shiva from the impending danger and saved the whole situation. Lord Narayan then informed Lord Shiva that this demon, Bhikkhusura, was killed as a result of his sinful activities. He was especially sinful and offensive because he wanted to experiment on his own master, Lord Shiva. Lord Narayan then told Lord Shiva, "My dear Lord, a person who commits an offence to great souls cannot continue to exist. He is vanquished by his own sinful activities, and this is certainly true of this demon, who has committed such an offensive act against you. Thus, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is transcendental to all material qualities, Lord Shiva was saved from being killed by a demon. Anyone who hears this history with faith and devotion is certainly liberated from material entanglement as well as from the clutches of his enemies. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 88th chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of Lord Shiva. It's the last benediction for sitting in class. Alright, we'll leave it there. I'll take one question. Did something? Oh.
I'm just wondering.
Well, we see in the beginning of the story that Lord Shiva gave his touch, healing touch to Bhikkhusura, and you know, he cut off all the, you know, so much meat, skin, you know, flesh from his body, and that all healed up in a moment. He got an instant benediction from Lord Shiva. Certainly there, when Krishna wants to perform his pastimes, you know, he performs pastimes with those who are somewhat qualified to engage in those pastimes with the Lord. You know, there are sometimes different events within, you know, the previous lives of people as to why they may suffer or enjoy certain benedictions in this life. Just like now we're in, you know, Purusha time mass, and you know, in a previous life, Draupadi had apparently said something about Purusha time mass in a, you know, critical way. And because of that, she had to suffer at the hands of Sukuni and Durudana. So sometimes, people achieve various benedictions and what have you. These things are usually mentioned if you go through the various Puranas and that, you can, Mahabharata and Ramayana. You generally see the past life of these personalities, why they, you know, have such power, but for the sake of the story, it's not necessary. But usually they're persons who are qualified to engage in that pastime up to the point that's required. Just like I was hearing a lecture by Indrajumna Swami, he was saying that he went to see Sir Soul or something. There's a circus where they perform various acrobatic feats and what have you. When he was there, they called someone out of the audience, and that person, randomly came out of the audience and and that person was, you know, the circus performers sort of made a fool of that person. They did all sorts of tricks and got them in all sorts of abomination. It was, you know, quite funny, and they sort of embarrassed that person quite a way. But gradually, you know, it was revealed that that person was actually one of the performers themselves who had been, you know, put into the audience. So, you know, it's like that. You see in Krishna's pastimes, there are a huge variety of personalities. They're somehow, their lives and their previous lives lead them up to that position where they're actually qualified to sort of apparently be selected, you know, to perform, joining on that pastime. You know, that it's, the arrangement is already made. It's like that. Because ultimately, you know, these pastimes, Prabhupada said is already the core, you know, in describing the different, you know, what they speak of the Lord Shiva and the demigods. Prabhupada Saraswati says, you know, what is, you know, what is so wonderful about Lord Varaha's picking up the earth from the bottom of the ocean, or Kapila Dev speaking the Sankhya philosophy, and he goes through the various incarnations like this. You know, what is so important about Brahma creating this universe? What is so important about Lord Shiva destroying this universe? Who can compare with Krishna himself, who appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and attracts and displays the wonders of the spiritual world in order to revive the spirit soul's eternal spiritual loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What can possibly... So, you know, Krishna appears in these pastimes and performs, it's like a stage performance to attract everyone back to the, you know, loving service of the Supreme Lord. And in order to perform that enactment of the pastimes of the spiritual world, you know, certain persons are selected and they're pre-qualified to demonstrate. But those pastimes themselves are so important. Every single detail is made you know, super excellent in order that those pastimes are able to fully demonstrate that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a reservoir of all spiritual rasas, and the development or bhakti of one's eternal rasa or spiritual relationship is the most important benediction that one can acquire, and that is only attained by Krishna himself ultimately, or Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what's even more, you know, when Krishna appeared, generally there is some specific qualification for persons like Brikashura, the odd demon and what have you, to literally interact with Krishna's pastimes. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, he literally just invited people who had no qualification at all. He literally invited them, you all come and you join in wholesale in these pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God in the Sankirtan movement. So, you know, there's a special... Krishna, we see, you know, we're a little amazed. How did Brikashura get into this pastime? How did he go to Vaikuntha? How did he do this? But we should take from that, how am I in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement? You know, that is even, you know, more wonderful like that. So, yes, it's quite wonderful in Krishna's pastimes, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are even more unlimitedly wonderful. So on that point, we'll just leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai.